of mine, there is nothing to hide. At any rate, it is thus that we should live, as if we lived in plain sight of all men. And it is thus that we should think, as if there were someone who could look into our innermost souls. And there is one who can so look. For what avails it that something is hidden from man? Nothing is shut off from the sight of God. He is witness of our souls, and he comes into the very midst of our thoughts. Comes into them, I say, as one who may at any time depart. I shall, therefore, do as you bid, and shall gladly inform you by letter what I am doing and in what sequence. I shall keep watching myself continually, and, a most useful habit, shall review each day. For this is what makes us wicked, that no one of us looks back over his own life. Our thoughts are devoted only to what we are about to do, and yet our plans for the future always depend on the past. Today has been unbroken. No one has filched the slightest part of it from me. The whole time has been divided between rest and reading. A brief space has been given over to bodily exercise, and on this ground I can thank old age. My exercise costs very little effort. As soon as I stir, I am tired, and weariness is the aim and end of exercise, no matter how strong one is. Do you ask who are my pacemakers? One is enough for me, the slave Farius, a pleasant fellow, as you know, but I shall exchange him for another. At my time of life, I need one who is of still more tender years. Farius, at any rate, says that he and I are at the same period of life, for we are both losing our teeth. Yet, even now, I can scarcely follow his pace as he runs, and within a very short time I shall not be able to follow him at all. So you see what profit we get from daily exercise. Very soon does a wide interval open between two persons who travel different ways. My slave is climbing up at the very moment when I am coming down, and you surely know how much quicker the latter is. Nay, I was wrong, for now my life is not coming down, it is falling outright. Do you ask, for all that, how our race resulted today? We raced to a tie, something which rarely happens in a running contest. After tiring myself out in this way, for I cannot call it exercise, I took a cold bath. This, at my house, means just short of hot. I, the former cold water enthusiast, who used to celebrate the new year by taking a plunge into the canal, who, just as naturally as I would set out to do some reading or writing, or to compose a speech, used to inaugurate the first of the year with a plunge into the Virgo Aqueduct. I have changed my allegiance, first to the Tiber, and then to my favorite tank, which is warmed only by the sun, at times when I am most robust, and when there is not a flaw in my bodily processes. I have very little energy left for bathing. After the bath, some stale bread and breakfast without a table. No need to wash the hands after such a meal. Then comes a very short nap. You know my habit. I avail myself of a scanty bit of sleep, unharnessing, as it were. For I am satisfied if I can just stop staying awake. Sometimes I know that I have slept. At other times I have a mere suspicion. Lo, now the din of the races sounds about me. My ears are smitten with sudden and general cheering. But this does not upset my thoughts, or even break their continuity. I can endure an uproar with complete resignation. The medley of voices blended in one note sounds to me like the dashing of waves, or like the wind that lashes the treetops, or like any other sound which conveys no meaning. What is it, then, you ask, to which I have been giving my attention? I will tell you. A thought sticks in my mind left over from yesterday. Namely, what men of the greatest sagacity have meant when they have offered the most trifling and intricate proofs for problems of the greatest importance. Proofs which may be true, but nonetheless resemble fallacies. Zeno, that greatest of men, the revered founder of our brave and holy school of philosophy, wishes to discourage us from drunkenness. Listen, then, to his arguments, proving that the good man will not get drunk. No one entrusts a secret to a drunken man, but one will entrust a secret to a good man. Therefore, the good man will not get drunk. Mark how ridiculous Zeno is made when we set up a similar syllogism in contrast with his. There are many, but one will be enough. No one entrusts a secret to a man when he is asleep, but one entrusts a secret to a good man. Therefore, the good man does not go to sleep. Posidonius pleads the case of our master Zeno in the only possible way, but it cannot, I hold, be pleaded even in this way. For Posidonius maintains that the word drunken is used in two ways. In the one case of a man who is loaded with wine and has no control over himself. In the other, of a man who is accustomed to get drunk and is a slave to the habit. Zeno, he says, meant the latter, the man who is accustomed to get drunk, not the man who is drunk, and no one